Hey Podnuts, Corey here from Instant House Call. Whether you're a break fix tech who needs to provide remote support on demand without pre-installed software, or a managed service provider who wants to connect to unattended PCs anytime, Instant House Call makes remote support easy. I want to invite you to try Instant House Call free for yourself. Go to podnuts.com and click on the link in the show notes, then use the promo code PODNUTS. Instant House Call is the best remote support on earth. We can prove it. Try it free now and see for yourself.
Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 427, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Halish. I'm joined today by Lynn Temps from TempsComputer.com or ComputerConsulting.com. How you doing, Lynn?
I'm good, Jeff. How are you?
I am doing excellent. So you contacted me the other day and said, you were interested in coming on Podnuts Daily and sharing what you do. And obviously, I want you to tell us a little bit about your background, but just kind of reading on your website and understanding where you're coming from. You've basically got a corporate, IT background, and you're kind of have gone into your own computer repair business. And you've been doing that for about the last 12 years, right?
I started right out of college. Okay. I decided in college, I took my first ready COBOL class.
Oh, wow.
That's going to tell you how old I am, but maybe not. And I loved it, believe it or not.
Okay.
And it was too late for me to change majors, but I decided I want to work in the computer field. And I got a job for an insurance company in Hartford, Connecticut, in their computer, their operations department in a data center.
Okay.
And they paid for me to go back and get a master's degree. So I got one in computer science.
Nice.
Yeah. So, I really liked the more technical side of it. And I was working for them in their most quote unquote technical department.
Okay.
But it was a big company, so you couldn't really work on a lot. And it was, not satisfying. So, I moved around a bit and wound up working for, I don't know if you ever heard of a company called Amdahl. They were a big competitor with IBM back in the day of the mainframe. And I was like they called me a software engineer, but I went from client to client that had Amdahl hardware and supported the software for it.
Okay. Yeah.
But I think the best part about that was I got the ability to troubleshoot. Because that's what I did most. Because any company would blame our hardware. It turned out usually to be IBM software, and it was always pointing fingers. Whose problem was it? So that was the troubleshooting was like so that helped when I segued into doing my own thing at home.
Okay, no, that's perfect. I think that's one of the things that as technicians, all of us. You really have to have some sort of troubleshooting skills in order to, work on computers, whether it be hardware or software, because both those things will mess up and you've got to sit there and figure it out. And the answer is not always as simple as, even doing a Google search a lot of times.
No, right. And it's often, I think, identifying what it's not will lead you to what it is.
Exactly.
You know?
Good point. Yeah. Very cool. Now, where are you at right now?
I'm in like suburban Philadelphia, but really close to Philadelphia.
Okay.
Like a block away, literally.
Gotcha. Okay. Very cool.
So that's where I grew up here. So I came back here, in the early 90s to live.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah.
So you've got a master's degree in
I know. Don't be too impressed. It's not that impressive. Don't be too impressed.
Well, is it one of those things? Does it actually help you as far as what you're doing today?
Yes and no.
Okay.
I mean, I didn't learn any, Windows. Windows wasn't even a thing when I was when I got my degree. I did learn Linux.
Okay.
That was what we were doing back then.
Gotcha.
But I've probably forgotten most of that, but it helps you, you spend a lot of time with theory, so you learn about the architecture of computers and what a virtual, virtual operating system, like paging files and all that kind of stuff. I knew what they were.
Okay.
you know, that kind of stuff, how a virtual, you know, operating system works. I'm trying to figure out, I forget the terminology already. but it did, you know, I never learned Windows or Mac or anything, you know, that all came later on my own.
Okay.
So all of that, but you guess it, so I guess it's a mixed answer there. Yes and no.
Right.
Well, you, it's impressive though. People are, when people say to me, when people say, how did you learn all this? I just say, oh, I have a master's degree in computer science. And that shut them right up.
They're like, oh, I get it now. Go, right. Okay. Yeah. That makes perfect sense. Now, if right. you go, you know, the answer I love to give to my customers is, I don't know. I just make it up as I go. They're like going, really? No.
I don't know how much I spend like day and night, like, you know, researching things and taking computers apart. And you know, that's what I do all day.
Well, I think so, you know, from my story, I know that I basically have, you know, I started off, you know, taking computers apart, maybe upgrading them, working on the operating system. I used to love doing Windows reinstalls, you know, they would, and by the time I would get done with a Windows reinstall, like back in Windows 98 and, you know, set everything up, it would be a 13-hour process and I loved it. And then as I got older, I was like going, man, I'm sick of that 13-hour process. How can I do this quicker or not do it at all?
Not doing it at all. Right?
So, but I think a lot of us got started out that way. So you went from, you basically had a master's degree, you moved on and you started your own computer repair business. Now, what kind of made you do that?
Well, it's a simple story. I had two kids.
Okay.
And I retired from corporate America because the job, you know, the jobs that I had were 24/7 on call jobs.
Okay.
And they did not lend well to being a mom.
Right, right.
So for a while, I really didn't do any computer stuff. And then, you know, what happened was like sort of in the late 90s, people started getting computers in their homes. You know, before that, people didn't have them so much in their homes.
Right.
And the people that I knew that started getting them, like, would ask me questions because they knew I worked in, I had a computer in my house since, like, you know, the late 80s, but no one had one.
Right.
And they started asking me questions because I already knew, like, well, it was Lotus 1-2-3 back then, but Excel, you know, like I knew all that already. And so it just sort of dawned on me, hey, wait a minute, you know, if these people need help, everybody needs help. So, so I really started more consulting, I would say, than actual repair.
Okay.
And I would go to people's houses and they would have questions and I would like train them or help them whatever, you know. I mean, I can't remember back in when it first started what I was doing. But I was doing it very part-time because I had these young kids at home. And then as they got older, I started to make it more and more of a full-time business. And then by then I had learned more about actually repairing computers and taking them apart and...
So you do both the software and hardware side. I mean, you sounds like you do it all there.
Well, I do. I think there's some stuff I don't do. I've finally realized that it's not that I can't do it. I don't want to do some stuff. Like
right.
I have a guy who has a, I don't have a retail store, but there's a guy very close to me who does, who I really like. We have a great relationship and I bring him some of the hardware stuff that I don't want to do.
Okay.
And he does it and we just, you know, and I, it's my client that I bring the stuff to him and he just does it for me.
Okay.
So, and I'm happier because I just don't want to do it.
No, that makes perfect sense. Yeah. I used to have a guy that would bring me laptops because I enjoy tearing them down. And, right. you know, he didn't. He would open up the bottom and pull a hard drive or, you know, change RAM out or something like that. Anything other than that, power jacks or whatever, he would just bring them to me and go, you know, charge me. You know, I charge him whatever. And then, you know, he'd take them back to his customer. And, you know, we had a nice relationship there.
That's exactly what I do. I'll do hard drives. I'll do RAM. I'll do the screen if it's easy. Some screens are easier than other screens. So I'll do the easy ones. If it looks hard, I take it to him.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that because, you know, a lot of times, actually to me, all screens are fairly easy on regular uh-huh. laptops. But I just had a computer that came in and it was a, and I didn't realize what it was. You know, they said, hey, I need a laptop screen replacement. It's cracked. Okay. They bring it to me and I'm looking at it and I go, oh, it's a, it's one of those ones that like splits apart. It was a HP Split X2. Okay. And I'm looking at it and I go, oh, the digitizer is what's broken. The screen's actually fine. So I'm looking at it and I go, and I don't really like working on tablets or, you know, any mobile devices just because all those screens are glued in.
Right.
And
right.
I really don't want to deal with, you know, taking those things apart because I've taken an iPod Touch apart one time and that was enough for me. I was like, no more. I could do laptop, you know, power jack repairs. I can desolder, solder all day long, no problem. That stuff was just like, you have to be so delicate with
right.
it. And then there's
so tiny.
They are. So
tiny. Right.
And then there's other people that have, you know, they'll take them apart and they'll basically, you know, they've got it down to a, you know, 15, 20 minute process, which is great.
Right.
I just didn't want to take the time and effort to learn that. But since I already had this computer and I was already here, so I actually went on iFixit.com and ordered their screen removal kit, which is basically a couple of gel-filled bags that you microwave and lay on the screen and then kind of pry the screen up. So I'm going to go ahead and attempt it. But yeah, most of my screen repairs are like less than 10 minutes.
So, oh, really?
Yeah. Okay, well,
that's great. Yeah, because yeah, sometimes for me, I don't know, I find myself with screws all over the place. I'm like, oh my God, I'm in way over my head. I got to
I got gotcha.
Take this to my buddy.
Yeah. Everybody laughs at me because they, you know, I tell them, I said, when I take a laptop apart, I just throw the screws in a bowl. They're like, no, you don't.
Oh, yeah. See, like, I can't
yeah.
do that.
Oh, yes, I do.
I have the iFixit magnetic pad. Have you seen that?
Yes. I actually have one on my desk yeah. now. I just throw the screws on there now.
Oh, geez. Okay. No. Good for you.
You know, I'm just, it's nice because it catches them. So a lot of times what would happen is I pull them out when I go to drop them in a bowl and they'd slip out of my hands and it'd hit the desk right. and it'd pop on the carpet and I couldn't find it.
You can't find it, right? So I just had, have you ever changed the screen in a Retina display Mac?
No, MacBook? Not a Retina display, no.
Oh my, well, don't is my piece of advice for you. So we just had one, I had one from a client and I take it right to my guy there because I'm like, the Macs are the worst
okay.
as far as taking the screen off. And they're basically, it's a very long story, but anyway, the bottom line is on these Retina display MacBooks, you literally just take the top of the whole top of the laptop off, the whole cover, and replace it. That's the only way to fix it. You don't, if you actually take the screen out, the screen is like, I can't even describe it. There's like sheets behind the glass. There's
right.
like thin, impossible to separate sheets. And after we lost money on that one because we, you know, initially just ordered a screen and it was more than the screen. It was the sheets were damaged behind it. And oh my God. In the end, we just had to replace the whole top of the laptop and
no.
just, you know, lost money because we'd already quoted the guy a price. And
I gotcha.
We couldn't, you know, he gave us a little more after we explained what happened, but, you know, we couldn't. We had already bought like multiple things. Oh, it was a mess. We're not, so that's, oh my God.
Well, you know, I had an Asus Ultrabook that somebody had brought me. Now I think it was a 13.3 inch or something like that. And basically the same type of story is basically the bezel is glued on.
Right.
And it's the same thing. You could actually get a screen for it. But when I looked at the process of changing the screen, I was actually able to find the whole screen with bezel and backing and everything all in one piece
about.
It was maybe a little bit more than just what a screen was. So I was like,
oh, that's good. Yeah.
And I basically, you know, so I told the customer, I said, hey, here's what it's going to cost to replace it, you know, and they were fine with it. Cause you know, those are still $800-$900 computers. So even if it costs, you know, I think it was $300 or something like that, or $330 or something, it was fine because
right.
it was better than replacing the whole computer, you know, but yeah,
right.
I think we're getting into that realm now where it's going to become a little more difficult with these touch screens. And what I'm starting to look into is, okay, because a lot of times I will have customers that will call me and say, hey, my daughter or whoever broke this screen again.
Right.
And I go, okay, it looks like a regular screen, but it's a touch screen. So I said, what I think we can do, and I'm not sure if it works like this on all models, I think we can just buy a non-touch version and put it in there and they don't need that touch capability, and that'll save you a little bit of money that way.
Right. So, that's a good idea.
So that's some of the stuff I'm starting to look into, because when you start quoting these touch screens to people, they're like, what? And I'm like, yeah, there's added value in that, you know, being able to touch that screen, I guess.
Right. Are you, no, I was going to say the retina displays aren't touch though, but they still, I don't know what, how they're made, but it's a whole different, it's not like a regular screen.
Yeah. Like you know, yeah. Apple's into, you know, putting the components into as small a space as possible.
Right. Right.
And making it the most difficult to repair.
Right. With special screwdrivers and all the whole thing.
So anyways, but yeah, so that's an interesting story, but I think we're going to start seeing more of that. I do like the regular, you know, ones where the plastic bezel, you maybe have two or three, you know, two or four screws or no screws at all. You just kind of take your plastic spudger and undo the pop bezel, it up, right. Unscrew it, look at the back, order one, you know, get that one in, you know, swap the cable, put it back, put the four screws back in and pop the bezel back on and you're done, you know.
Those so, I can do.
Right.
Right.
Those are my favorite because, obviously dollar per hour, I make the most money doing those versus having to, you know, heat up a screen or, you know, some other crazy process.
Right.
So obviously you do some hardware and you're doing software and stuff like
that.
What type of software do you work on?
Like I've most always been a software person, just like my whole history. So I'm just more comfortable with it. But well, let's see. Windows. When if someone has a problem, like what people always have problems with their email, or they have problems with it's more like, or if I'll go over to what I'm trying to find my niche in, like the home office crowd, because there's a ton of people that work out of their homes,
right?
And they need IT support, and they don't have it. You know, they can't call anybody anymore. So that's what I'm trying to be for them. So they can call me, and like I'll go over and today I'll give you an example. Today I was at someone. She runs a business out of her house. She has two other people work for her. And she was using POP email.
Oh.
All right. Wow. And right. So I had been telling her for a long time she had to get off of POP. So instead of asking me what to do, she just switched to IMAP. And I probably would have had her go to some kind of exchange, you know, thing. But anyway, she went to IMAP and now she wants her assistant to be able to look at her IMAP email. And you would think that would just be easy. You would just set it up in Outlook for the assistant. But every time, and they're both using Outlook 2013, but every time the assistant, we'd set up the email on her computer, everything that the owner has deleted starts coming back. So it's like a very weird problem.
Oh, okay.
So I was over there today, actually just upgrading her to 2013. She was on 2010 of Outlook.
Okay.
So I said, okay, first thing we got to do is get you up to the newest version so that we can eliminate that as an issue.
Gotcha.
Because that's what Rackspace was telling her, that she's got Rackspace email. They were telling her that was the issue.
Really?
Yeah. But then I said, okay, you know what? Not a bad idea. Upgrade it. So we did that. The long story of it is that, you know, that's the kind of stuff people call me about. I can do it remotely, you know, from my house, which I do a lot of.
Right.
Or if they, you know, if I want to go over there or if they want me to come over, I can do that as well. And we haven't quite figured that one. We're not quite done with that yet because she was still having, like when I opened the, she's got a laptop as well as her own desktop. When I opened up her email on there, like all the deleted stuff started coming back into her.
Now, when you set it up, was it there's a for IMAP? There's a checkbox for, and I can't remember exactly what it's called, but it's a checkbox for keeping all the email even after it's deleted. I think it's been a while since I've even set my own
up. Right, I'll have to go back and look at the, you know, the settings on the Rackspace website. I don't remember what they had for that.
Okay.
Right. But so that's something, you know, I go over there, or I'll go, like when she originally switched, I got onto all the computers and switched up all the settings on her Outlook so that they all would do IMAP instead of, you know, instead of the pop settings she had.
Right.
So that's one kind of thing. What else? You know, sometimes people call me up because they can't print. You know?
Oh, yes.
Oh, I hate printers. Yeah. Printers are my least favorite thing.
I'm with you there. Yep.
Printers and AOL are my two least favorite things.
Yeah, there's a lot of those, though. AOL and printing, yes.
A lot of lawyers use AOL still. This is what I have found.
Okay.
Don't ask me why.
Sure.
They just, I don't know. They just like, I don't know. They don't want to change or something. So I'm trying to think. I have to look at my calendar and see what I've done lately.
Now, who do you use for remote support right now?
I'm using TeamViewer. So a year ago, I bought TeamViewer. And, you know, of course, I bought TeamViewer 9. And then like 6 months later, they're like, well, now we're on TeamViewer 10. You know, we want you to buy that now. You know, at a discount. But I'm like, oh, no, I just already spent, you know, I don't know how much it was. It was
right.
a lot.
Right.
It's a lot of money, you know.
Sure.
And so I'm sticking to TeamViewer 9 right now. And what I do is I just have a link on my website for people. You know, I just send them to my website to download the TeamViewer 9.
Okay.
So because if they go to TeamViewer's website, they'll get 10. And then that's not compatible with what I have.
Ah, okay.
So you can just send them to, you know, you can just download the old version yourself and put a link on your website or something.
Sure.
And send them there. And then I also just started using GFI Max. I'm trying to get into like a little bit of managed services because I was talking to, you know, every time I go to client, I would talk to them about it and they were interested in it and willing to spend monthly, you know, pay monthly to have me remotely manage their computers and not have to do any more Windows updates or Adobe updates or Java updates and antivirus. So I've sold a few of those in March. You know, I think I sold about 5 of them.
Okay, great.
So I can use, they have like TeamViewer under the covers of their, you know, take control is what they call it, but it's TeamViewer
right.
in there.
Yep.
Right. So I use that as well for them.
Okay.
So that's been fun, like starting to learn that.
Yeah. Now, obviously are you using the managed antivirus and all that kind of in the web protection and all that kind of stuff on there? Or?
Yeah, I do. You know, like I have like 3 different levels that I,
okay.
So wait, I'll step back and say, I read this book. I'm sure you know the book. It's called Managed Services in a Month by Carl Palachuk. Have you ever heard of it?
You know, I've heard the author's name before, but I don't remember reading a book, you know, by that title. No.
Oh, okay. It was a great book.
Okay.
I read it and he basically tells you step by step how to get into managed services in 30 days. But I didn't actually do it that fast. And he really focuses on the business side of it. So if you're supporting servers and business clients, which I am to a degree, but not like he is. So, and okay. I figured I could do this with the home user market.
Right.
So I sort of tailored it myself to my own, you know, home user market. And, but it's very helpful. It, you know, he says like you need the 3 things you need are, you know, a way to track your finances, like QuickBooks, whatever, a way to do the remote management, and a way to keep like a PSA to keep track of your ticketing.
Yes.
You know, so I already had the QuickBooks. I had to add the GFI, and I'm starting to use Repair Shopper now.
Oh, great. Well. Yeah, that's my favorite go-to program right now.
It was it. Yeah, I just start to use it, and I really like it. I'm like, wow, why wasn't I using this before? This is so great.
Probably the same reason I wasn't, because I was, you know, I was doing everything manually, and I still, this is bad, and people laugh sometimes, but I'm still using, just because I'm trying not to outlay any more money this year. So I'm working on getting the basics of my business solid, and so I'm still using an Excel spreadsheet for my financials.
Oh, are you really?
Yes. Okay. One that I built myself, and it does what I need it to do, and my accountant likes it just fine. So I eventually will get into like a QuickBooks Online or something like that. But it's just, anytime I go to learn any of these systems, it's really like pulling your hair out trying to learn. It's a huge learning curve. Software, I'll be honest with you, in my opinion, learning software sucks.
I agree. So. I only like to listen. I find that I when I give people my recommendations on things, it's usually stuff that I know.
Yes.
You know, it's that, again, that's why I'm recommending it. I know it. It works well. Use this. So, you know what I had to do with QuickBooks? My accountant wanted me to switch. So I had to have his assistant, like I paid someone to come over and teach me QuickBooks. Because I said, you know what? I'm not going to spend 20 hours learning this. I need,
right.
In like 2 hours, you need to tell me what I need to do. So they, you know, he came over and did it, and it was well worth it.
Okay.
And then now I know it pretty well. I've been using it for like, I guess 5 years now. So
okay.
I know it pretty well. But initially I was like, I don't know what to do here.
Right. Yeah. I think that's probably what I'm going to have to do. And that's probably why I haven't, you know, done that yet, is just because right. I know I'm going to have to pay somebody to basically consult me on setting up my QuickBooks and going from there and, you know, moving all my stuff over into, you know, from my Excel spreadsheet. And you know, what's nice in at the same time, I know Repair Shopper has hooks into QuickBooks and QuickBooks Online. And so everything that I do inside a Repair Shopper would be so much easier because it would just transfer over to my QuickBooks.
Right.
And right now I have to, you know, I want everything automated, yet I still do that portion of it manually.
Right. Well, I mean, you still have to type the stuff into QuickBooks.
Right.
Although with Repair Shopper, you don't. And that's what I'm actually, this is what I'm going to just start testing out tomorrow, is creating the invoices in Repair Shopper and having them go to QuickBooks, I guess is how it works.
Right. Yep.
Which would be awesome.
Exactly.
That would be so awesome.
No, very cool. I like a lot of those systems. And what I really like about Repair Shopper in itself is that, to me, it is really based around, you could use it for other businesses, but it's really niche for computer repair businesses.
Right.
And
right.
It covers everything that we could actually think about. And, you know, those guys over there, you know, Robert and Troy, they put so much time and effort into coming up with new things and making it better all the time that I'm just like, this is great, because it's a constantly growing product and it just works. And there's a slight learning curve. I'm not going to lie. You know, that's one of the things, that it's software. But once I figured some things out, and you can always email those guys and ask them questions and they will get back with you.
Oh, that's
and
great.
Say,
okay.
Just do this. You know,
I've been watching their, like, I think Saturday I spent most of the day watching videos of Repair Shopper.
Okay.
You know, I sat there watching YouTube videos.
Now we did a. It's been a two-video interview from those guys, and I think it was episode 114 on Podness and Computer Repair Podcast. But you can go find the links for the videos, and basically you can watch. We go through. We talk about the things that they put into Repair Shopper. We talk about setting a client up in video one, or setting yourself up and setting a client up in video one, and then we go a little bit more in depth on video two. And we're actually going to, here in about another month or so, we're going to do a video three and go even deeper into it, because there's a lot of things that I've learned over the last, however long I've been using it since early last year. And so what I'm trying to do is kind of build a little video series so that people can go watch one, two, and three and get a lot of that information all kind of in one setting. Mm-hmm. And, so hopefully that's going to help some people out there. But yeah, I every time I learn something new, there's always other new things to learn when it comes to that, because it's like, oh, I didn't realize you could do that. Oh, that's been in there. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Gotcha. Right. Oh, I mean, I barely know what I'm doing at this point. You know, I'm just, I've just started to scratch the surface, but I really like it.
Yeah.
I would think if they could get an app, a mobile app, I don't know if they're working on that. That would be awesome.
That would be awesome. And I haven't asked those guys that specifically, because I don't know what all that entails. But yeah. I still do use the web version on my tablet. You know, a lot of times if I have what I was telling those guys is that if I have a customer, every new customer, I make them fill out a written sheet and sign the back inked form. I mean, it's just the way I do it.
Uh-huh.
And so I at least have that one copy. Now, if you're a repeat customer, you come back in, I already have all your information. So basically what I do is I pull my tablet out and I go to the web page, and basically they can jot their little signature on the same, you know, forms that I normally have. And just signs your computer in again, and boom, you're on your way, ready to go. So they don't have to fill out the paperwork every time that they come and
right,
see me.
Right.
So it makes it a little simpler.
But, yeah, that's good. Yeah, that seems like a good idea.
So what? And so now, as far as like, so I mean, obviously, you're doing, you know, people have slow computers. You're doing virus removals and cleanups, I'm sure, you know, things like that.
Yeah, I do. Let's see. Well, I'm just looking at last week. What I did last week. So I mean, last week I had somebody who lives in a pretty big house, and she was getting, she couldn't get good Wi-Fi reception in her house. You know, so I went over there and put in a different router and an extender.
Okay.
You know, I had another client who has, I've been doing a lot of Mac stuff.
Okay.
I actually wound up getting, you know, one of their certifications, their Apple support.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I forget, Apple support professional certification. And then what I did was I signed up to be on the Apple consultant website. So you have to, so there's like three Apple stores within 15 miles of my house. So it became very apparent to me about 6 or 7 years ago that a lot of people, that I knew were switching to Macs. So I decided, at first I was very hesitant and I thought, oh, I don't want to get into that. I don't want. And then I was like, you know, this, they can't just keep going to the Apple store. Eventually that 3-year warranty is going to wear out. And you know what? That was a smart thing. And I, so I took this test, like, which is like the A+ for the Mac, although it's not nearly as hardware specific. It's just software.
Okay.
It's a certified support professional, I think it's called. Anyway, and signed up to be on the consultant, an Apple consultant. So like now that when the Apple store has someone that comes to them and they can't help them, and they either need someone to come to their house or it's something that's not under warranty or whatever, they refer the customer to this Apple consultant website. And there's a few of us in the area, but one of the guys only does businesses. Very few of them go to homes. So
okay.
I get all the phone calls and I wind up going to their homes and businesses, you know, and like, it's no different. It's just different, but not very much different. It's all the same to me, you know. Just using OS X, you know. So, you know, people, mostly what I find with Mac users is that they are almost completely clueless. I think as a Windows user, you have to know a little bit more about the operating system and how it works. And a Mac user has to know nothing. And I go over there and they're running an operating system that's like 8 years old with, 2 gigabytes of memory in the computer. And it's working pretty good.
Right,
but,
right.
They can't do anything new that they want to do. And sure. So, you know, it's time to upgrade the memory and upgrade the operating system. And, you know, they want to use the iCloud or, you know, that kind of thing. So they have to I have to move them forward.
Now, would you say, now I know hardware wise, there's not a whole lot. As a matter of fact, before we got on this call today, I actually had somebody come by and I actually pulled a MacBook apart for him because it was one of the 2011 models. The bottom comes right off, you know, no big deal. And this story is he basically, his wife spilled wine on the computer and he took it to the Apple store because I think it was still under warranty at the time. He takes it up there. The guy hits the power button after he's been told that there was wine spilled on it.
Oh, geez.
And I'm like going, are you in? Of course, the computer turned on. It was fine. And seems like it's working fine. And I'm like going, are you kidding me? So I had to explain to the customer. I said, listen, I said, next time, if you ever spill anything on a laptop, I said, it's going to find all the little nooks and crannies in here. And that wine or pop or whatever is going to go everywhere. And then what ends up happening is, yeah, you might not have a problem now, but it's going to start to get corrosion. On the points, on the motherboard, on, you know, the cables, whatever. And so when I pulled it apart, sure enough, there was corrosion on the motherboard. And at the Apple store, they said, well, the problem you're seeing, and it would get this white screen and then it had a blinking folder icon.
Oh, that's the hard drive usually.
Right. Except there's nothing wrong with the hard drive. So the guy said, listen, he goes, it's probably going to be, he goes, this is what I've seen. It's probably the cable. But they will not replace just the cable at the store without replace because there's been something spilled on it without replacing the whole logic board and everything.
Oh my God.
Really? I'm like, and it was like $800. And I'm like going, and the guy, you know, he got it on a discount through school and he got the whole thing with Apple Care for, you know, a year or whatever for like $900. And it's like, well, you could just go buy a new computer for $800. But I opened it up and I go, I said, yes. I said, see the screen stuff on the motherboard? That's corrosion. And you could see where it had, the wine had come down through the fan, and basically this fan had spun and it got just a little bit over under the bottom of the case and a little bit on some of the components, not real bad. So I'm like, well, I said, listen, I said, I cannot, you know, without pulling this whole thing apart, I said, I don't know what's on the other side. I said, there's corrosion here. I said, you can try to clean this up yourself, buy a cable. You know, I basically showed him how to replace it because there's, you know, it's not a guarantee that, you know, I can fix it. And it's still going to cost him a pretty penny to have me tear the whole thing apart and replace the cable and all that kind of stuff. I said, if you want to give it a shot, I said, go ahead. I said, if not, you could always bring it back, but so he's going to try that anyways. But yeah, it's just all that corrosion and stuff that's on there.
Oh my God, yeah.
People just don't realize. It's like, well, it's been working fine for 5 months. I said, yes, but you know, and I had to show him here's right. What happens. And so I said, yeah. And when you tell somebody that you spilled a drink on your laptop, the first thing they should be doing is pulling the battery and, you know,
turning it upside down.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's like, well, actually, a lot of people get into a lot more trouble that way. I've had people where shake the laptop out and they get it all over everything at that point.
Yeah,
I'm like,
right.
Just leave it, turn it off, pop the battery out if it's a PC, bring it to me. I've got to strip the whole thing down, clean everything with alcohol, clean it all up, brush it off, and put it back together. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, you can save them that way. But what ends up happening is most people go, oh, it couldn't have gotten that far down in there. And they'll hit the power button and all of a sudden, it's like, are you serious?
Yeah, I heard this noise. What did that mean? Oh,
that means it's going to be about $500.
Yeah. Right.
Go buy a new laptop. So,
well, the thing is, like, people with Macs, some of those Macs cost $1,700, $2,000. They'll spend $800 to fix one.
Right.
You know, it's amazing because it's still cheaper than buying another one.
Absolutely. If you can fix that stuff, it's not that big a deal. Now, let me ask you this. So now that you have taken the test, number one, would you recommend somebody that, because obviously you use a Mac. Probably for your business. Okay. Oh. Now, if somebody doesn't use Macs, how would you suggest that they learn it enough so that they could take the test and pass it? Is that something where they should get an inexpensive Mac that they just play around with, or what would you think?
Yeah. So what I did was I did buy in about 2007, I had bought myself a MacBook, one of those white.
Yes.
Those white MacBooks. So I bought one of those, and I wound up buying a book from Peach Pit. Is a peachpit.com is a they sell like Apple video. They have videos and books and stuff about training yourself using Apple products. And I bought a book on basically on the exam. There's a book on the exam. So I just literally went through the book. It's how I taught. I have an A+ certification too. I did the same thing. I just went through the book and with a computer sitting in front of me.
Okay.
And I just taught myself, you know, basically what was in the book, which was basically what was on the test. I have, in my my own personal possession, I've got my main computer is still a Windows 8 computer. You know, I have a Windows 8 computer, Windows 7. My laptop is a MacBook Air, and I have an iMac. But my, you know, the iMac was a client who did, the hard drive died, and he didn't want it anymore. And I said, can I have it? And he said, sure. And I put a new hard drive in, and now I have an iMac.
Oh, very
so,
nice.
Yes.
Okay.
So I do use them. But I wind up using all of my email and everything. I use Google Apps for my business, so I can be on any device,
right,
and get at my stuff. And I also, before I switched to Repair Shopper, I use Evernote for like all the notes I keep on my business because I can use that on any device.
Gotcha.
And,
okay.
You know, so I don't want to be married to any one system. Because I need to be able to switch freely back and forth. And I do have an iPhone that I, you know, basically run my business off of the phone because I'm out all the time. And, but yeah, I think getting a used Mac whatever way you can, you know, eBay or whatever, get one and sit down with the book. If I can send you a link to the book.
Okay.
And it's not hard, you know, it's just not hard to learn. And it's just another thing you can say that you offer. And, you know, when you become an Apple consultant, though, Apple makes you jump through a few hoops to do that, though. You have to pay them a yearly fee. You have to get insurance, which actually I didn't have, which of course I should have. So this made me get insurance
okay.
for my business. I don't know if you have that, but it was something I never had, but obviously makes sense to do it.
It does. And, you know, in one of those days, when I first got into business, you know, where I was actually charging customers, I had basically looked into some sort of insurance. And at the time, it was just way outside of what I could afford at the time. So, but it definitely, as my business grows, it's one of the things that I definitely need to look into, you know, just to protect myself.
Expensive. Right. It's not that expensive.
Right.
It's not as bad as you think it's going to be. They wanted you to have $1 million. And I think it was so, if I went to someone's house and I tripped on their steps or I broke their, you know, Ming Dynasty vase or something,
right,
that they wouldn't get sued.
Exactly.
So, and that was like only a few $100s for that a year, which is really not that bad.
That's not bad at all. It's where did you find the insurance? Did you go through
I went through someone that I knew, you know, a broker, but it's through CNA as the insurance company. But it was somebody that I happened to know personally who, you know, I used to get it.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'll definitely check back into that. Now that you become a, you know, Apple certified person that can work on Macs. Now, is there any way that you can you get parts?
No.
Okay.
There's no benefit. There's no there's nothing. They give you nothing. They send me a lot of emails for more training that costs like $2,000, you know, that I'm going to do. But no, there's really no.
Because I don't know if you found this, but a lot of times for hardware, that's what I've found is a lot of times I'll tell people, I said, listen, if you're going to buy a Mac and you're spend all that type of money, listen, just pay the yearly Apple Care fee. Just pay for it. Count it as a cost, because here's the problem. You're going to bring it to me and it's going to cost me so much to get that part. Right. And plus the time to, you know, the labor to put it in. I said, you're going to be better off, you know, most of the time taking it to a you know, an Apple store. But the unfortunate part is like this situation where somebody says, hey, my wife spilled wine on my MacBook Pro and the technician at the Genius Bar, you know, hits a power button. Great genius. That was awesome. Yeah, you know?
Well, I always love that they call them geniuses. You know, yeah. Oh my God. Right.
So it's like going, don't get me wrong, not everybody's perfect. I get it. Right, we all make mistakes. But, you know, at the same time, you're like going, seriously? They just told you they spilled something out of your, the first thing you do is hit the power button, because obviously you know that you have to pull the back cover off even to unhook the battery, because they don't pop out like a regular PC laptop, you know? So,
I know.
Benefit, huh? Other than you can say that you're certified.
No benefit, except I show up on their website. If you looked at the Apple consultants website and you put in, you know, a zip code near me, my business would come up.
Okay.
And that's the only benefit.
That's not bad though.
Yeah. No, I do get, I keep track of it. I don't know off the top of my head, but I do get business through it.
Right.
No, and what happened is I tell people too, get the 3-year Apple Care, because it's totally worth it. Because you can go, if you go back, other than spilled wine on your computer, they will almost give you a whole new computer if something's wrong. I mean, if there's something wrong with it, they will fix it. And so that's wonderful. But after the 3 years is over, you're done. Their answer is buy a new computer.
Okay. So it's a 3-year max on the Apple Care then. Okay.
On that warranty. Yeah.
I didn't realize that. Okay.
Yeah. So then, you know, most people want to keep those more than 3 years. So.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So
if you're just paying $2,000 or whatever for a computer, you're going to keep it for more than a couple years. So.
Exactly. So that's been good too. And I just find a lot of people, I just think it brings me more business. And then, they'll have a Mac, they also have a Windows computer. right. you know, or their husband has a Windows computer or whatever. And, you know, so then I can get that business too.
No, that's perfect. Yeah, a lot of times I think we're trying to find ways into, you know, we want to support whatever residential customer or business from a standpoint of being able to support whatever they have coming in. You know, if it's a bring your own device to work, you know, type scenario, or a residential, you know, a customer that has many different gadgets from your iPads to, you know, any Android tablets or, you know, Windows, Mac, whatever, all these different types of devices. It's like, not always do you run into a household or a business where everything is identically the same, you know?
Right. And I think the problem with the Apple Store is that if you go in there for a solution to something, you're only going to get an Apple solution.
Right.
You're not going to get a solution that's Google or Gmail or, you know, how do I use Outlook? Oh, I can't help you with Outlook on your Mac. You know, we don't do that. We don't support that. So that people need that. So,
sure.
So that's when they come to me, for that as well. So, and you know, and I like to give people the, you know, trying to figure out what is the best option for them, not necessarily what's the best option for, you know, Apple's selling them and as well, they should, that's their business.
Sure.
Selling it for what's best for them. That's how they should do it. But I don't have to do it that way.
Right. And you're coming from the consultant standpoint. I think that's where we're kind of all at, where we kind of we're trying to find the best solution to fit the customer at that time.
Right.
You know, in we've said this a lot where there's nothing wrong with making money, but you don't really need to sell things. You need to offer solutions and let the customer decide what it is they're willing to pay for or what it is, you know, or what they're not willing to pay for. You know, that type of thing.
Right. But having said that, I have, you know, as I was telling you before, being in this ACRBO group on Facebook and LinkedIn, they've given me, those guys are great, and women and guys are great, and they've given me ideas. Like, I do now sell, well, I've been selling Carbonite for a long time, but I also are starting to sell MCSoft to,
okay.
I got a reseller license for that. And I'm also looking into Rackspace because I do like them for an email provider. And if someone doesn't want to use Google, you know, they want to bring their own, you know, domain name and don't want to use Google Apps, then I might as well make some money off of it. You
sure.
know, it's not, and I'm not going to push them that way for me to make money. I'm going to, if this is a solution that works for them, then I will say, you know, and that's what I do with Carbonite. I don't push them to use it. I just say, look, you want to back up your stuff? Here's a cloud-based backup solution that I think works well, you know.
Absolutely. No, I agree 100% because, you know, a lot of times I've been using Carbonite for the last 5 years myself, and Carbonite's went through some growing pains over the last five years. And it's now to the point where I feel very, very comfortable recommending it. And because I'll be honest with you, a lot of these other solutions that are, and I don't think cloud-based is, you know, the only solution you should have, but all these other solutions of plugging a USB stick in or plugging an external drive in and unplugging the external drive,
right?
You're leaving it up to the customer who's not going to do it, period.
No, and I mean, I don't know, Jeff, how many times if somebody come to you and say, or I hear them say, my hard drive, and this happens on these new, all the new Macs have only solid-state drives, so they're small.
Right.
So they're like, you know, I'm going to put all my pictures on this external hard drive. I said, but then how is that getting backed up? Well, that it's backed up. It's on the external hard drive.
Right.
Like, no. No. So they don't understand, you know, and I'm like, well, you have to back this up to a cloud service then, you know, that'll back up your external hard drive as well as your laptop.
Right.
So that, you know, that I just had someone bring me an external hard drive that died and all their pictures were on it. And I wound up sending it to, I couldn't recover it. So I actually just sent it to Gilware.
Yep. Okay.
I've used them before. They're great. Anyway, we'll see what they can do. But it was, it wouldn't power. You know, the thing has no power anymore. So
okay.
I don't know if they can recover that or not. But.
Oh, I'm sure there's, you know, there's Gilware. I know I also do another podcast with Scott Moulton from My Hard Drive Died. Oh, okay. .com, and you know, they
look into them.
Yeah, they basically do the same thing. They'll do that recovery, and you know, if they got to pull a circuit board off and replace it with another, you know, same drive to get it to power up or whatever, that's the type of things that they do. Yeah, I do more of the software end of it. If I can, you know, basically see the drive and you know, try to access the data that's on the drive, I can do that. But a lot of times, you know, if the drive's not moving,
yeah, there's nothing. Exactly. I do.
You're
kind
of stuck.
Exactly.
So now, as far as going back into, I think we were talking about too. Now, I asked you, do you do virus removals and stuff like that? Okay.
Right.
And kind of what's kind of your process of doing that? What do you find is working for you, as far as cleaning computers up nowadays?
Right now, so you know, it changes, but right
always.
Now, yeah, right, it's constantly. But right now, sort of my go-to things are: I usually run Malwarebytes. I'll run Adware Cleaner. I run. I always check for the Palix. You know, I have the little. ESET Palix checker or whatever.
Right.
I run that to just to be sure. Wait a minute. And then do those three. Oh, and then I do, I go through all the browsers, you know, reset them, or if I can just delete the stuff out of it, you know, the extensions or whatever, I do that. But usually reset them. Sometimes super anti-spyware and sometimes not. I don't like, you know. And, that's pretty much it. I usually, you know what, I go through all that, and if it's still really nasty, you know, or things aren't working well, I usually will suggest a wipe out and a reload.
Okay.
And I'll just do that only because then I know it's clean, and it might take, you know, then I might spend an hour at their house doing what I just said, and then if it's not like clean in that amount of time, then I take it home and charge them a flat rate to wipe it out and reload it.
Okay.
And they always go for it. You know, and I'm not doing it because I want to do it that way, but I feel like that's the best way.
Oh, I can't stand doing the wipe and reload.
I hate them. I know. I don't like them.
Avoid it like the plague if I possibly can.
No, I agree.
You know, I've learned, yeah, there's a lot of different techniques for doing virus removals. And I think I've got a process now that, you know, I rarely ever have to do a wipe and reload anymore, but...
I haven't had to do one in a while.
They just, you know, I know some people's businesses, you know, and if this is the way you want to do your business, that's fine. But a lot of people's businesses are based on, they just pull it in and it's, you know, back up the data, wipe and reload, and they're on their way. And I'm like going, regardless, it's not a long time on keyboard necessarily, but it's still a long process. And I can't think of how many things I go, hey, did I load? Hey, did I put?
Right.
Even though
I have a checklist and everything.
Exactly. And I'm like, oh, I just don't like doing it, you know? So it goes back to the days of when I used to do a wipe and reload every 6 months on my own personal computer and take 13 hours to set it up. No, man, if it's going to take me any more than an hour anymore, I don't want to do it.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
So, but no, that's cool. So what are some of your favorite tools, or, you know, software or hardware wise? Obviously you're using Carbonite for backups, you know, stuff like that, but do you use any other you talked about some of the virus removal tools, but is there anything else out there that you use that you couldn't live without in your business?
I couldn't live without. God, I don't know. What else do I use? I was trying to think of this before we talked.
Do you use anything to back up the data for the customer so you can put it back on a system if you have to do it?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll back it up with Acronis. If I'm going to wipe out and reload a computer, I'll just do literally a copy and paste of their like user profile.
Okay.
But I also will do a clone of the hard drive. So in case I, you know, something's in some funny place that, you know, that I didn't copy, then afterwards, and they're like, I'm missing this whole folder, and it was in their program file or something, then I can get it back. But what I was going to say, going back to when you said you didn't want to spend more than an hour to wipe out and reload, but you know why I find that's annoying for me is like, because I want to give the computer back the way I found it. Like, I don't want to just reload it and then put a folder on their desktop. Here's your data, you know. And my customers want their Outlook back the way it was, and their, you know, and where's all the saved email addresses? You know, they want everything back the way it was. So the wipeout reload is a nasty business if I have to do all that. Anyway, but what other things do I use a lot of? I use like this mini tool data recovery. That's the one I use for data recovery. It's called Mini Tool. You know what? I'm not on my main computer here, so I can't.
I'll tell you what. If you want to send me any links for those, I'll definitely put them in the show notes so people can go check those out.
Yeah, it's called Mini Tool Data Recovery, and that's what I use when I'm trying to recover people's data.
Okay.
I bought a copy of that, and it works pretty well for software, you know, recovery.
Gotcha. Okay.
Use Carbonite. I've been just like I said, I just switched to the GFI, you know, Max Focus, whatever they're calling it now.
Right.
And so I've put their antivirus on my own computer, the managed antivirus, to see how it worked, and tried to infect my own computer, and it like blocked it before I even was able to. Like I tried to download a fake Adobe Reader program.
Oh yes. Oh yep.
You know, everybody gets that one.
Sure.
Or Flash, maybe it was, and it blocked it before I could even install it, which that was pretty impressive to me.
Excellent.
Because usually it's after the fact.
Right.
You know, the customer installs it, and then maybe their antivirus will say, "Oh, you installed something," but by then they've installed it already.
Exactly, and I think that's one of the things that I went and took Ken Dwight, the virus doctor's course, and that's one of the things he was talking about is that we're kind of talking about, I didn't like to put anything other than an antivirus and maybe, you know, like a malware bytes or something like that for malware.
Yeah.
And, you know, basically he was saying in today's day and age for the end consumer, not for us, but for the end consumer, they really need to have an internet security suite. And one of the things I'd said to him, I said, well, the problem is those things, they hog so much resources and they slow the computer down. And he goes, okay, what you're thinking of is like 5 years ago.
Is Norton 5 years ago or something?
Yeah. I mean, nowadays, with the amount of processing power, the RAM that's in a lot of these systems, you can run a good internet security suite, you know, whether it be a ESET, Kaspersky, you know, Bitdefender or whatever. So what I started doing was I started to test some of those out because they have some really nice features that do block you, like you were saying, from getting certain things. And I also use the GFI Max too. And it's, it's nice with, I think with their managed antivirus and the web protection and doing all the regular updates on its own. So you're not searching for the flashplayer.exe. That's actually a, you know, virus, in a shell. And so I think when you do a lot of that stuff, I think it really helps the customer to avoid a lot of those problems. And, you know, I think it's something that, I explain to my customers, I tell them, listen, they ask me all the time, how do I not get infected?
Right.
I said, well, technically you can't. I said, we can do this. We can give you a, you know, decent internet security suite, which is not going to stop everything, but it's going to give you a good protection wall that's going to protect you up to a certain point. I said, or we can give you a managed service that's going to make sure all your updates are done, make sure that, you know, the antivirus is running. If it catches anything, it's going to knock it out. We'll get you the web protection. And if you do have a problem, I can remote in and basically fix the problem for you quicker because there's already a base of things that have been done. I know that everything's being updated. I know that there's an antivirus and a web protection running constantly and doing its regular checks. So for me to go in and do a cleanup from that is so much easier than the person who goes, yeah, my computer's been slow for like the last 6 months. And it's so corrupted and Windows is so messed up and there's so many viruses and pieces of malware on there. It's just ridiculous. So I feel good in, you know, giving the customer, I do a free, you know, virus removal if they are part of my service.
Do you do more than one? That's what I do too. But suppose I get a second virus, like 2 months later.
I'll do it now. Yeah. I will be honest, and this has never happened so far. But if I do come into a problem where somebody is doing something that they really shouldn't be doing on that computer, we'll probably have a talk, and I'll go I can't continue to cut. If you're going to continue to go to these places, I cannot continue to cover you. You know, I mean, I'll leave the service on there and stuff like that, but I can't continue to give you these for free.
Right.
At some point, there's going to come a cost. But I'll be honest with you, for most people, I really don't ever have anybody that's, you know, that's infected or has a problem as of yet. So
yeah, right. I haven't either. And I think I told them I would give them three.
Okay.
Free, you know, removals. And then after that, but no one's had one yet. So
exactly. Right. So I think if you, yeah, I think if you had to do somebody's computer, I look at it this way. If I had to do, you know, for what I charge, if I had to do one free virus removal for the year, it basically pays for a service that they probably would have never came and brought it to me because they wait so long.
Right.
But at the same time, I have a good feeling about it because they are able to use their computer on a regular basis and it should work pretty much the same unless there's a hardware problem each and every day that they open it up and turn it on.
Right. And I think for me too, I was like the number of phone calls I was getting from people saying, I got another Adobe update. Should I do it? Is this one real?
Oh,
yes. 'Cause I had warned them, don't do. So those are the people that I definitely sell the managed service to.
Yes.
And they go right for it. They're like, oh, do I never have to do this again? Okay, fine.
Exactly.
Yeah, they're happy to do it. So, and that's been great.
Yeah, that really helps because a lot of people, that's what they tell you. I said, hey, see this little blinking blue box down here? That's your Windows updates. You actually need to click on that.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know, so I didn't want to touch it. I'm like, well, I understand, but yeah.
I just say no. Every time it asks me, I just say no. I love that. I'm like, oh my God, really?
But you know, you know what? What I explained to people is I said, listen, you enjoy doing whatever it is you do online, reading your emails, checking, you know, websites for, you know, for whatever, you know, reading articles, running your business, using your QuickBooks. I said, a lot of people don't really want to spend the time and effort to sit there and figure out why their computer's not working. They just want it to work. And so we have to give them the best scenario to make that, you know, to make it work as best as possible most of the time. So I think that's one of the things that.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
That
no, exactly. That's
helps.
Exactly what I want them to have that experience with their computer, you know, and to think that I was the one that helped them do that.
Yeah, exactly. It is a good feeling. 'Cause you know, again,
yeah.
You know, and it's like I said, there's nothing wrong with making money. It's just that.
Yeah, right. And I like to be. The other thing I was going to say, you made me think of this, is locally, and I've talked about this on the ACRBO website. We have a Facebook group for like the our community. Like I live in a small like suburban area, and people say, "Oh, does anybody know a good plumber? Does anybody know a good computer person?" And not by me asking anybody, but a lot of my clients have referred me and I've gotten a ton of business like that.
Nice.
But the great part is like it's no advertising.
Right.
My own clients are advertising me. And so I sort of had recommended on this at this group to, if you don't have a local community network, like start one.
Right.
Start one on Facebook, you know, and just start advertising it at your shop or whatever, or even with other local businesses. And it's really been a great thing.
That's a good tip. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you become the computer guy on this community network and people ask questions and I'll answer them, you know, as long as it doesn't take too much time or something I can answer quickly. And then they think of me.
Right.
Which is what you want them to do when they have computer problems. So anyway, that's my.
No, that's a good point. You know, it's like, you know, this it's same thing. Like this guy that brought this MacBook to me today, you know, I spent 15 minutes with him and basically, you know, tore it apart, looked at it, you know, cleaned a couple things up real quick and showed him what the problems that I could see were potential problems. Gave him a couple options. He's going to take it back and try it himself. And he's like, what do I owe you? And I'm like, you know what? Nothing. I said, I gave him a stack of business cards. I said, if you know any, you know, obviously you live in the area. If you know anybody else that needs computer repair, just hand him my business card. Because to me.
And he will.
Exactly.
Because you build goodwill that way.
Yep. And nobody else would actually, nobody else wanted to look at it. They're like, nah, I got to replace all the innards.
Yeah, right. Right. But at least, right. You took the time and he's going to appreciate that and he'll remember that.
Exactly.
And that's great. That's great. I guess, and going back to what utilities I use, TeamViewer.
right. Okay.
Really has been a huge boon to me to have a consistently easy to use remote access.
Absolutely.
System. I mean, I would much rather sit at home and remote into everybody all day than go out.
And a lot of times that's what I love about the, you know, managed service too, is like, because most of the time, at least you know that, hey, as long as they're online, you can get in there and clean things up. And there's been a lot of customers where I go, you know, hey, let me remote in and see what's going on, you know, because they're still online or just maybe their computer's slow or whatever. And they're like, I didn't realize you could do that.
Yeah, I know.
You know, and it's like, it's amazing to them, you know, it's, oh, and a lot of times if people have a, you know, an issue, instead of me driving out there or them bringing the computer to me, it's so much easier for me to go, hey, let me remote in. And oh, there we go. You know, 5-10 minutes later, we fix your problem. You're good to go. You know, and then you bill them for the time or whatever. But I think it works out really, really well and saves, you know, because I actually work a full time job and this is a part time gig for me. So,
oh, really? Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, and I see.
So my time is very valuable when it comes to a lot of that stuff. So I try to make it be as available as possible, but these are some of the things that I have to do in order to do that. So,
are you in the computer field in your full time job?
No, I'm actually I'm a laborer for Ford Motor Company. So,
oh, okay, interesting.
That's why I listen to like 40 hours worth of podcasts every week. Right.
And now I see why you got time, right? While you're working.
When I'm just doing the labor, I can just sit there and, you know,
listen to it and
learn new things. So
that's great.
Yep.
That's great. The other thing I do is I teach at Community College of Philadelphia.
Oh, nice.
I teach Word, Excel, and PowerPoint.
You know, I'll tell you what, that is something that is definitely needed out there because I always say that I'm going to take an Excel course or I'm going to take because I live in Microsoft Office. From OneNote, you know, through Excel and PowerPoint and all. And so to me, there's a lot of things I've had to self-teach myself. And again, it's the learning curve. Okay, how do I do formulas in Excel? How do I make this easier? Right. And it's like, it takes a long time to learn that stuff. But if you can, you know, learn from somebody's course, I mean, that's awesome.
I'll give you a link too to the book, like on Amazon that I use. Well, you know, it's not, I didn't pick it. The school picked it. But it's a book, it's like a step-by-step book. I mean, it starts very elementary, but it does get into more intermediate level stuff. And it's a great resource for, you know, how do I do this in Excel? I mean, obviously you can Google stuff, but if you want to sit there and actually take the course yourself with the book, like you could totally do that.
Okay.
And it's not expensive and you could sit there and take, and you would be amazed because when I first taught the course, I had to do that because I had used it like you use it. I didn't really know it enough though to teach it to someone else. Like,
sure.
So I had so I went through the book and I can't believe how much I learned.
Oh, great.
So much that I didn't know about, you know, just all kinds of different features and stuff. And, you know, and the school stays up to date on the, you know, so they taught, the last semester was 2013, you know, we're up to the, you know, they stay up to date on the current version.
Sure.
So it's good. Yeah, so that's been interesting too.
Oh, that's very good. Well, you know, and it helps you to, because obviously if you're doing a lot of consulting, when somebody does have an Excel, you know, question or a Word question or something like that, that's something you can deal with because you know it better. And I think a lot of times I get those types of questions and I go, my first thought is, I don't know, but let me take a look at it. And I can usually figure it out, but it takes a lot of time to do that if you don't know it.
Right.
You know, so.
Although, I always say, Google is your friend.
It is, but here's the problem nowadays with Google, in my opinion, is that Google is, you know, back in the day, you could do a Google search, and you could pretty much get down to a topic with a pretty simplistic search term. Nowadays, it's like you get everybody that, either people that don't know how to explain it right, or expect you to know certain things about it that you really don't know. And there's very few people that will walk you through step by step. And here's the problem. So what I've found nowadays is Google is good for helping and pointing me in the right direction. But the bottom line is a lot of times I still have to figure it out on my own because nobody has the complete solution out there.
Right. You're right. Unless I can go to iFixit.com and get a step by step. Or something like that, or even Microsoft, and get something from their website. Right. No, you're right. It is, there is a lot, you have to wade through a lot of stuff, which you know, going back to my days searching through IBM microfiche, I think I learned that. I think that's where I learned that.
Now talk about old school.
I know. I'm old, man.
No, you know, when I was, I mean, don't get me wrong. When I was in high school, we still, you know, we still had that for, you know, doing searches and stuff too. So.
Yeah. I mean, yeah,
I laugh because we've come a long way. You know, we really
have come a long way. I did. Yeah. Like I did at one point use punch card. I was at the very end of my college was using punch cards. They were just transitioning to terminals.
Oh, wow.
So like, yeah. Which is a, and then when my first job in Connecticut, they had punch cards. They had rooms of punch cards.
Oh, wow.
For the first, you know, but this was like in the mid 80s.
Sure. Sure. No, that's funny.
Oh my God. But anyway, right.
Oh, that's cool. Well, Lynn, I'll tell you what, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. And I think you've shared a ton of good information you know, that I think people will get a lot out of. And I'll tell you what, if people want to get in contact with you, what would be the best way to do that?
It would be lynn@temscomputerconsulting.com.
Okay.
It's Thames like the river.
Sounds good. Okay. Well, again, appreciate you coming out on the show and sharing with us today.
Thank you, Jeff. It was really fun.
Yep. We had a good time. Okay. All right. And let's see. You guys can find me also on the Google Plus at Jeffrey Hallish or Twitter at TechNutPC. And if you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show like Lynn, just email me at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. And if you guys want to leave a voicemail, you can call 1-888-697-0162. And I want to thank our sponsor, Instant House Call, for this episode of Podnuts Daily. And don't forget, if you guys ever need business paperwork to get you started in your computer repair business, then check out the link for the TechNibble Computer Business Kit over at podnuts.com. If you guys could do us a favor and leave us a rating and or review over on iTunes, that would be great. That'll let more people know about us. You guys can also help support the Podnuts Network. The next time you're shopping at Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily. My name is Jeff Hallish. I am the host of Podnuts, where Chris Carruthers and myself take live calls on the air to answer questions or to get answers from other computer repair techs every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern. You can check it out over at podnuts.com/live. Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.